ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 Canto 4, Chapter 16, Text Number 6.
Vasukala upadate,
Vasukala upadate,
Kalishayam vimunchati,
Samak
sarveshu bhuteshu, Pratapan suryavad vibhuhu, Vasukala upadate,
Vasukala upadate,
Kali chayam vimunchati,
Samak
sarveshu bhuteshu, Pratapan suryavad vibhuhu, Vasu,
riches.
Kali,
in due course of time.
Upadate,
exacts.
Kali,
in due course of time.
Cha,
also.
Ayam,
this king Prithu.
Vimunchati,
returns.
Samaha,
equal.
Sarveshu,
to all.
Bhuteshu,
living entities.
Pratapan,
shining.
Suryavat,
like the sun god.
Vibhu,
powerful. Translation, this King Prithu will be as powerful as the sun god. And just as the sun god equally distributes his sunshine to everyone, King Prithu will distribute his mercy equally. Similarly, just as the sun god evaporates water for 8 months and during the rainy season returns it profusely, this king will exact taxes from the citizens and return these monies in time of need. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The process of tax extraction is very nicely explained in this verse. Tax extraction is not meant for the sense gratification of the so-called administrative heads. Tax revenues should be distributed to the citizens in times of need. During emergencies, such as famine or flood, tax revenues should never be distributed amongst governmental servants in the form of high salaries and various other allowances. In Kali Yuga, however, the position of the citizens is very horrible because taxes are exacted in so many forms and are spent for the personal comforts of the administrators. Next paragraph. The example of the sun in this verse is very appropriate. The sun is many millions of miles away from the earth, and although the sun does not actually touch the earth, it manages to distribute land all over the planet by exacting water from the oceans and seas, and it also manages to make the land fertile by distributing water during the rainy season. As an ideal king, Prithu would execute all this business in the village and state as expertly as the sun. Vasu kala upadate kale chayam vimunchati. Samak sarveshu bhuteshu pratapan suryavad vibhu. This king Prithu will be as powerful as the sun god. And just as the sun god equally distributes his sunshine to everyone, King Prithu will distribute his mercy equally. Similarly, just as the sun god evaporates water for 8 months and during the rainy season returns it profusely, this king will exact taxes from the citizens and return these monies in times of need. So several points here. At the end of the previous, just a little bit about nomenclature. At the end of the previous chapter, this is chapter 16, so the end of chapter 15 and the beginning of chapter 15, the persons speaking are addressed as Sutta. And then in the beginning of this chapter, they're called Gayakas. I want to just go through this a little bit. Vedic culture is very specific and intricate. There's a general category. Gayakas means reciters. And then there's different kinds of reciters. In the 10th canto, there's several references in relation to Krishna specifically, where there's some detail. Suttas, generally, are identified as Puranic speakers, like we mentioned yesterday evening. Ramaharshan, disciple of Vyasadeva, was placed in charge of the Puranas. So he was given the title, Ramaharshan Sutta. Sutta is a title like Bhattacharya or, you know, different titles of persons that have a skill, and so they're given a title like Dvivedi and Trivedi. And eventually they adopted those names because they became expert in two Vedas or three Vedas, these so-called experts. They meant by memory, they could recite the entire Veda. In fact, the Vedic system was they would recite it forwards and backwards, just like double check. And then they had a whole team of people that would check to make sure that they could do it correctly forwards. Because before they were written, they were preserved by memory. And, you know, memory can be faulty. So they would do it backwards and forwards. Now we have computers because we have bad memories. But so suttas and his Ramaharshan Sutta named his son Sutta. I mean, just took the title Sutta, so it became Sutta Goswami. There's others. Magadha, just like again yesterday evening, Magadhendra, the Indra of the Magadhas. Is an area, a province, or a state, Magadhendra, or person. So, the Magadhas they were brahmanas who had their profession was, they would make formal recitations of something, formal recitations of glories of the king, commonly. Magadhas. And then another is Vandi Bhi. And these were more general, like festival people. They were musicians, and they would sing and recite the glories of somebody. So more of an informal, and then the formal, and then. So And I'm sure there's subdivisions of those divisions. People that some did this and some did that. And the Vedic system is very systematic and very, very detailed. So in any way, in any case, the persons who are reciting are reciters, guhakas, and, excuse me, gayakas. Gayakas. Gaya means to speak. Gayakas. And they're reciting the glories of King Prithu, and in King Prithu's presence. He's taking the role of, he's the personality of Godhead, or an incarnation, an empowered incarnation of the personality of God, is sitting there hearing his glories, and he's embarrassed. He's expressing his humility before them. How awful of a situation it is that I'm sitting here listening to you recite my glories. The Prabhupada's comment is, as much as a person who has made some mistakes is very embarrassed to hear persons reciting their mistakes, an elevated person who is hearing others recite their glories, it's very difficult for them to hear it. But they go on describing his glory. So another point is, just yesterday's verse was, they were describing how he is the embodiment of all the demigods, and as in general a qualified king, or a truly representative king of God is embodying, he's the embodiment of all the demigods. But that's the Vedic culture. And now it's getting specific. He's carrying the capacity of the sun god, or at least in a metaphorical language, like the sun. And there's two things mentioned. One is, as the sun shines its rays equally everywhere, the king shows his mercy equally everywhere. And the other, we'll get to in a moment, but the process of extracting taxes. So just as far as the equipoised position of a realized soul, or the equipoised position of Krishna, I'm sure you noticed in the third line here is samak sarveshu bhuteshu. So here's a Bhagavad Gita quiz question. Where does that phrase appear in Bhagavad Gita? Chapter 18. You know the verse? Anybody know the verse? Chakri? Brahmabhuta Prasanatma. So let's recite it together. Brahmabhuta prasanatma na sochitki na kankshati samak sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim bhavate param. Krishna, this is coming, this is like the prelude to our 1866 verse. This is the summary of all the teachings of Bhagavad Gita up on a very high level, taking us to that position of full surrender to Krishna. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes joyful. He never laments or desires to have everything. He is equally disposed towards every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. So that's a pure devotee. Many of us were wanting to say, samak sarveshu bhuteshu na me dveshosti na priyaha. Right? Na me dveshosti na priyaha. Krishna says that about himself. This is the position of pure devotee in the position of Krishna. Na me dvesho sti na priyaha. He doesn't feel dvesha towards any living entity, nor priya towards any living entity. Samak sarveshu bhuteshu. He's equally disposed towards everyone. Let's spend a little time, because this is such an important question. It's a lead question. It's how the entire Canto 7 begins. Canto 7 begins with Maharaj Parikshit expressing to Shukadeva Goswami that he has a doubt. And the doubt goes back to something that Shukadeva Goswami says in the last chapter of Canto 6, where Shukadeva Goswami is describing how hearing the prayers of the demigods of their great distress at Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu's terror program, he supported the demigods and appeared in the world and annihilated Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. And then he describes how Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu were conceived, the pregnancy of Diti in an auspicious time. That's the last chapter of Canto 6. So the beginning part of Canto 7 is Maharaj Parikshit saying, wait a minute, I have a profound doubt, because I have always understood that the personality of Godhead is Nami Dvesho Stina Priyaha. He's equally disposed towards everyone. But you said that he became partial to the demigods. And then he asks, why would he do that? It's very specific. He says, what advantage would he have in doing it? What benefit would he derive by doing that? It's a hint at why persons who have a position of wanting something, they like someone, and that's something that they like or have, and they think it may be at risk by someone, they don't like someone else, friends and enemies, having to do with need or want. And that has to do with the living entity being dependent. So if the living entity hasn't taken shelter of Krishna, unto whom they're dependent, then they may feel friendship or enmity towards others in order to get what they want or preserve what they have. But Krishna takes care of giving us what we need and preserving what we have. One who has taken shelter of Krishna has no dvesha nor priya in a material sense towards anyone. They're equal towards anyone. So Prabhupada explains in that section, there's a whole chapter that's discussing the point. It's so important that it makes a whole chapter at the very beginning of a canto. And so important because, well, we're caught up in friends and enemies. Or, you know, this one likes me, this one doesn't like me. This one has something that I want. That one has something that wants to take something from me. And that material calculation colors our ability to see ourselves as spirit soul and others as spirit soul, and we get caught up in the eye and mind program. The cure, the cure is to properly see Krishna. And if we don't properly see Krishna, we can't get out of the eye and mind program. And the distortion and disturbances from that distortion in our relationships with others. Just a little social comment. I was visiting in Houston just before here, and it's taking forever to build the temple. I mean, in one sense, it's a little embarrassing, and the devotees are uncomfortable about it. But their circumstances, and in any case, they still haven't built the temple. I was there on Balaram's appearance day because they asked me to change. I had planned to be there here for Balaram's appearance day, but they asked me, please change it so that you can be with us and we can have the temple opening on Balaram's appearance day. So I changed my ticket. But they didn't have the temple opening because different reasons. They got some advice. Anyway, they want to do refinements. Well, it's a little detailed. The temple president went to visit some family, and they saw their house was fabulously decorated. Millions, not just the house, but the decorations. Millions of dollars for the decorations in and around the house. He thought, we can't have Krishna's temple less than that. This is Krishna's temple. So we need to do some embellishments, like interior decorating or whatever. So he contacted Charu and Vaibhavi, because they're really good at it, and they gave a number of recommendations, so they're working on it. Okay, so in addition to completing the temple, the plan is to have a community, because the location of the temple is, not in a very expensive neighborhood. It's like, a simple neighborhood. It's a Mexican neighborhood. And so, at least before they start, he started very quietly buying land. So it wouldn't send up the property value. Just leave the thing that's there and just buy the land. They have these little houses, trailer park kind of houses all over the place. Little houses, lots of families on one piece of land. So he bought the land, let them stay there, so it wouldn't drive up. Anyway, so gradually, now they're starting to build. And, many families are building houses and building houses and building houses, so they can, like a village, they can just walk to the temple. It's an interesting history, the whole, the building that's now the temple used to be a little church. Used to be. With a little, spire and little, but because it was a poor neighborhood, they couldn't maintain it. And so they bought it. The temple bought it. But they were previously downtown Houston in this little place. Not nice place. It's, getting started. And then they bought this other place. And now it's a village. So what became clear to me from my short visit there is it's one thing when people live at distances and maintain friendships. And you bring people closer together and closer together and closer together, what happens? You see where their limitations and shortcomings are. Just like, you live together as families and husband and wife and children, what's what with everybody. Before that, you don't know. And then you live together and you find out all kinds of things about one another. And then that's one of the things that makes holding marriages together a little difficult, because intimately about someone's weaknesses and, their whatever it is. And how to stay. So now you bring families close together, or right next door. Not like, over there and over there and over there. And then you come together, have a nice function, you go back to your home. That's easier. You come together and, stuff starts to happen. So I advised him, I think you should, because friction will come when you bring the bamboos together. have systems in place where when there's some friction, you can address it immediately, like an ombuds for the community, and conflict mediation and resolution. What's it called? CDR? Conflict mediation. What's it called? What's it called for in the corporate world? Conflict. And whatever it is. You understand what I'm talking about. Conflict dispute resolution, CDR. Conflict. Okay, so what causes that? You know, our impurities, and you rub against, our impurities rub against another person's impurities, and you get a spark. So how do you have a community that doesn't have sparks? Well, like, how do you have a family or doesn't have sparks? You accept one another. It's like, this is a sociological little digression, but see on the platform of the soul. And here's a soul. It's whether my spouse or my child or the child seeing my parents. Here's a soul that's attracted to Krishna and wants to go to Krishna. And there's some coverings of the soul that are like vestiges of other stuff. But the person is the soul that wants to go to Krishna. And then you look at that and you work out differences, because, you know, you accept the other person and help the other person in a family. And then you have a community, and it's the same principle. It can be a little more challenging, in part because the commitment isn't the same. In the commitment of husband and wife, or family, children, there's a commitment to the family, to one another as a husband and wife. And you work things out. But then you go a little bigger. And then, you know, well, I don't know if I have the same kind of commitment to my neighbor as I do to my husband and wife, or husband or wife. So it's seeing on the platform of the soul. How do you get that nice verse from Bhagavad Gita? Shuni chaiva sapa kecha pandita samadarshana vidya vinaya sampane brahmani gavi hastani. Shuni chaiva svapakicha pandita samat. So how do you see equally when there's obviously stated differences? You see on the platform of the soul. Then you can see equally. Sama darshana. See equally. Or like this. Samak sarveshu bhuteshu. See on the platform of the soul. Well, but if we're not on the platform of the soul, we're on the platform of the body and the mind, then you're going to have conflicts. Guaranteed. How can you have harmony on the spiritual, on a material conception? I'll just share this with you. I'm preparing a presentation to make this coming semester, the fall semester at colleges, with an interesting title, The Conformity Game. College students. Conformity Game. But it's not just college students, it's... So how finding your real self, how can you be who you really are without succumbing to the conformity game? You know, like peer pressure. Kids go to college and they have all this pressure to do something, whatever the latest something is. And how do you be yourself in the midst of all that pressure? That's going to be the message. And, you know, so talking about the sociological thing and kind of gradually bringing it over to what Bhagavad Gita says, and go back to the pressure game, and, you know, so many different ideas. Rami made a really beautiful graphic presentation for this, and then lead into, it's not possible as long as there's a material conception. You can have platitudes, like, you know, euphemistic sounding, let's get together and love one another. I saw a video of Yogi Bhajan. You know who Yogi Bhajan is, Sikh religion. He was a contemporary with Srila Prabhupada. And he had great regard for Prabhupada. So there was a situation where they were together, and Yogi Bhajan had this idea. He was moving his hand like this. He said, "Swamiji, you're a very powerful spiritual figure in the world. Why don't we bring all the religious people together and give the message that they should love one another and spread this love one another message throughout the world?" And before he even got to finish, Prabhupada said, "They will never come together and love one another. They will never." And he was like, "Well, we should at least try." And what Prabhupada wanted was not the message, "Come together, love one another," but there's God and there's the soul and there's a relationship with God and soul, and that's how you get the outcome if you have the right center. And if people are not willing to be centered in, okay, who is God? And so they will never. And, you know, community, we will never. We'll just be endlessly managing conflicts or looking the other way, pretending it's not a conflict. Unless there's a spiritual conception and we work towards that. We help one another towards that, as should be happening within the family, similarly within the community. And then, you know, then ISKCON. And I can say, as a GBC person, I have an assortment of firefighter uniforms. Many, many hours are spent putting on the fireman's hat and jumping down the pole and getting the fire truck and putting out a fire, because a little spark became a flame and the flame became a blaze and the blaze became a fire, because of people coming together without a spiritual conception and, you know, doing their thing and then not liking someone doing their thing, and then it becomes a fire. So, samak sarveshu bhuteshu, it's a very important, like you say, philosophical concept, but it's a very important, more importantly, a way of viewing Krishna, because that's the question Maharaj Pariksit is asking there. Wait a minute, Krishna is supposed to be neutral, but it looks like he's partial. And at least in Krishna's case, Prabhupada summarizes in those beginning purports, this is because we may see Krishna like that because one is looking through the lens of material conception, like a filter. You don't see Krishna, you see filter. You see like you are, friends and enemies. So he asks the question, what would he have to gain? Well, how would he benefit from this? You know, I can understand how someone can benefit from something and so they're partial. But Krishna is Atmarama, so how will he benefit when he's already Atmarama? So that which looks like partiality isn't partiality, because partiality is based on I have something to gain. Krishna has nothing to gain. So when he, Krishna, punishes the demons, vinashayashu duskritam, and he protects the devotees, pritranaya sadhunam, is the same. He's delivering them, or he's delivering them. He's showing his mercy, or he's showing his mercy. He's merciful. It's his nature. He shows his mercy this way, he shows his mercy that way. So now the next part is, like the sun distributes its sunshine everywhere, What can you do if somebody hides under a rock? There's no sunshine. But that's their choice, not the sun says, oh, I'm not going to show any shine on you. Someone can conceal themselves or remove themselves from Krishna's mercy or a devotee's mercy, but the devotee doesn't stop being merciful because the devotee's merciful and Krishna's merciful. So now, this other example of rain and the metaphor of rain being like taking the water from evaporating the water from the seas and the lakes and the rivers and then distributing in the form of rain. Taxation is like that. So the sun, here's the, you know, the 8 months, at least in India, and this is still, it's a really hot season. It's now the rainy season has begun, but the summer season is so hot. And one can go, oh, why is the sun so hot? Sun isn't being kind. It's too hot. And then comes the rain. Oh, now here comes the rain. Oh, now it's too much rain. Or not enough rain. So the issue one may have, you know, God. Why is God now scorching me? Now God is inundating me. As the sun is shining its rays, the regulation of the elements is when things are done in a as was described in the previous verse, when the citizens are doing their proper duty and offerings of sacrifice unto the devas, then all their necessities are supplied in a regulated manner. As there, it's the irregulation of weather and so many things is directly connected, according to the Vedic conception, of people neglecting their religious duties. And so it's a reaction. There's irregulation. There's extremes. Sometimes too much, sometimes too little. Extremes. But it's not that God is cruel. He's scorching us or he's flooding us. You understand it. The point is it has to do with the disposition of the living entity towards Krishna, towards God, and their execution of their duties. That's our Vedic understanding. And individually and collectively this goes on. So, the taxation issue is the government, when there's protection, Prabhupada explains this in the first canto, when there's protection of the citizens for their well-being. Protection doesn't just mean you have a big army and a police force. It means that the protection of others is that they are engaged in their proper duties. Then that's the best protection. It's like the best friend. The best friend is one who reminds you of Krishna. You want friendship? Be Krishna conscious. And be a walking reminder of Krishna person. And then you're the real friend. And your exchanges with others are with that in mind or on that platform. You're simply wishing to restore the memory of Krishna, remembrance of Krishna always, in all circumstances. That's the best. Suradam sarvabhutanam. Krishna is that, and the devotee of Krishna is also that on Krishna's behalf. It's the real standard of friendship. So if the living entity starts going off, then Krishna may remind that living entity, and that's not his cruelty, it's his friendship. But someone may go, oh, it's like a child. If the parent says no, for a good reason, the child may not know what the good reason is. They want something and the parent says no. And they cry. Because they want something. If they're deprived of that something, Why are you being mean? So one of the things that's helpful for parents is not just say no, but in whatever language perhaps can be understood by the child, depending upon age and social development, here's the reason why, and so we don't do these things. Because. Then it's, oh, okay. Yeah, but all the other kids are doing these things. Why I can't do these things? Your parents know the whole story. It's the friendship of the parents toward the child, or the friendship of Krishna toward the living entity, or the friendship of a devotee, not to like blast somebody, use scripture like a stick and hit somebody, but to help somebody come to the position of, again, remembering Krishna. That's the best friend. And it may have to be said strongly, it may have to be said gently, it may have to be said indirectly, whatever it takes to get the message through that remembrance of Krishna and acting in a way that's pleasing to Krishna is our way of life. So sometimes the sun is shining and taking water. And sometimes by that action of the sun shining, taking water, rain is distributed. So taxes is supposed to be like that too. The king owns the land, at least the Vedic model is, because God owns the land, and he's representing God, so it's God owns the land, and in the agrarian-based society, some percentage of what is produced from the land goes to the king. What's the purpose? So that when there is some difficulty, the king can distribute. As being stated in the purport, when there's flood or drought or some difficulty. And because the king is performing that function, taking taxes isn't a cruel thing. It's a good thing for everybody if the government's not corrupt. But final point here is that unfortunately Kali Yuga governments are corrupt. Taking of taxes is not for that purpose. And it goes on in different versions and varieties in different cultures at different times through the greed of unqualified people that take the post. And then people don't like taxes. And the description in the 12th canto is the taxation will be so unbearable. So unbearable. The people will just leave and go live in the forest. And many other things that will encourage them to leave and go live in the forest. But we're getting the picture here, just to end, with Prithu, who's the glories of a king, and naturally Prabhupada is doing, juxtaposing the inglorious nature of current leadership or kingship or heads of state side by side. This is the proper model. This is what we should aim for and emulate. But we can't get there without God consciousness or awakening of Krishna consciousness. And from the previous verse, the means for doing that is seeing things as offerable to Krishna through the process of sacrifice. Without that training and education and qualified brahmanas to lead the procedures, our sacrifice is the chanting of the holy name. So much of our theology is centered on the holy name. It's right at the center. And then at least the opportunity is there for purification and gradual awakening of the desire to serve Krishna, and then scripture guides us in how to do that in practical ways. Hare Krishna. Any discussion?
King Prithu is a good king, and he did a lot of activities as an example to his citizens.
So
he encouraged all the citizens to do a lot of sacrifices and good things. So there might be citizens who don't follow it, like who don't do it or who
It didn't. In his case, it didn't happen, but they would be reprimanded. The detail of how persons were reprimanded, I can't think of any specific examples. If someone was like hiding and not doing, making the pretense of doing but not doing, the principle, as for the detail I don't know, but the principle is the administrative head, Prabhupada has taught us over and over, is to see that people are doing. That's administration. So let's take our Krishna conscious concept aside from, you know, a government, just our community. The leaders, GBCs and sannyasis and temple presidents and all their devotees, they are to see that devotees are chanting their rounds and they're following the principles and they're rising early in the morning and performing arti and, you know, doing the religious practices, the essential cleansing of the heart activities, and abiding by standards, let's say standards of deity worship and things. That's administration. It's like a spiritual part of administration. And then there's practical things, and that's not non-spiritual as opposed to spiritual. It's also to see to the proper ordering. Just take this little example. Those leaves that are on top of the arch. You know, Balaram Jayanti was Tuesday. And just until this morning, the dead flowers decorating the Sringasan were just, you know, on the columns. And so Mataji removed them because she could reach them. But how many days passed? It's small. But it's indicative of the festival is for the pleasure of the Lord, and when there's dead flowers, you remove them. It's not for the pleasure of the Lord, you leave them. It's a small thing, but in an indication of consciousness of who is it that we are to be serving. And, you know, I could give other examples. But it's not, the purpose is not finding fault or anything. It's reminders of what is our activity that's going to elevate our consciousness towards Krishna consciousness, and then be in an atmosphere as a community where we're living in a wholesome way together. You know, one way is to think, well, it's somebody else's responsibility. That's one way to think. Another way is fault find. Why aren't they? Another way is, you know, let us come together as a community and help one another to come to nice standards with Krishna the center and with a spiritual conception of how we get there, what our goal is. So take it away from, you know, the government to a community. It's a lot easier to, you know, deal with, think about, and then try to practically implement. And then you can take it one step back and just say within the family. You know, when there's something, or another something, or, you know, how do I receive feedback in the home where I need to, you know, be more Krishna conscious? And how do I express to others in the family, you know, let me help you become more Krishna conscious. You know, helping one another in the mood of service starts in the family. It starts within our own heart, rather than beating ourselves up for we're not, you know, we're less than what we want to be, or finding fault with others to get to make us feel better about where we are, or something like that. It starts inside, and it, you know, expands. Anything else? Yes.
Arishantra mentioned when there's rub of two devotees with a little bit of impurity sense.
Yeah.
So after passing the conflict, when you go back and chant the statement and being white, we have identified falsely and made conflict over there. And then we seek the forgiveness for a question of which one we mean, what the others have done. But the conflict is reminding a couple of times in the day to day life, which is stopping the dispersion chanting.
I heard the narrative, but I don't catch the question. So don't repeat the narrative. What's the question?
So the conflict is keep reminding by doing my acting.
You, in your mind, you're thinking of the conflict instead of chanting.
Yes, ma'am.
That's what you're saying?
Yes, ma'am.
And how do we get rid of the thought?
Yes, ma'am.
So that I can apply my conscious energy to chanting instead of to the conflict.
Yes, ma'am.
That's your question?
Yes, ma'am.
Few things. Our scriptural teaching, I put it as a question, what is our scriptural teaching when there is some conflict between one person and another person? You go to the other person and say, my dear Prabhu, something. You know, let's work this out. Let's say, you know, because we have families done in the family, or if expand it out and it's not the family, it's other persons that are not our family members. How do we work it? Amongst Vaishnavas, when we make a mistake, we apologize for the mistake. Supposing we don't even know we made a mistake, we're open to hear from others that we made a mistake, and other that when we should not be defensive. But if it's like what wasn't exactly like that, then we have respectful dialogue to sort out what exactly happened, and then apologize for my part in making this little conflict. And sometimes it's simply a misunderstanding, and sometimes it's, you know, real and tangible. But if it's like just one of those misunderstanding things, you know, at least this is what I do. I apologize for being a contributing part to the misunderstanding. Somehow I didn't communicate myself properly. Somehow I didn't act in such a way that it was understood what my intention was. I apologize for that. Although it's not like, well, you know, my intention was, you misunderstood my intention. You misunderstood what I said. What's wrong with you? Not like that. You know, the wish is, you know, harmony. That's one thing. Take proper Vaishnava action to address to address yourself to that which is eating away your thoughts and your feelings. In a Vaishnava manner. Another is second chapter, tongues to tiksha sabharata. Sometimes there's this and sometimes there's that in the world of duality. And you tolerate because it arises from sense perception only. There is no substance. The substance is that, so you withdraw that mental energy and place it on from asat and place it upon sat. That's, you know, control of the mind. You practice control of the mind under the instruction of the Vedas, not like imagined, but under the instruction of the Vedas. Bring the mind to sat. Withdraw the mind from asat. And then you can say, yeah, but, you know, the mind still wants to go there. You just continue to discipline and practice controlling the mind and bring the mind to sat. And when your mind is then fixed in sat, you're much more in a position to act in a Vaishnava manner in relation to the other person and get a Vaishnava or Krishna conscious result. So you can't avoid, one must not avoid controlling the mind. It's essential, not optional. And the third is a much bigger area of faith. By the process of bhakti alone, that is connecting myself with the Supreme, then purification will result. And my tendency to get myself implicated in conflicts will diminish, and my ability to address myself properly will diminish. So faith going to bhakti, as opposed to faith going to, let me go, like, fix the problem. Doership. Instead of doership, it's faith in the bhakti process. Like, where do you invest your consciousness? Where do you invest your consciousness? There's, I can say other things, but I think that's good. Anyone else? Yeah.
It's, there's this saying, people have said it in many different ways, from like Socrates to Buckminster Fuller, where...
What's the topic? What's the topic?
It's about the government and the way you're talking about.
Okay.
The quote that's been said many ways is, don't expend all your time and energy in fighting the old system. I've come up with a new and better model to make the old model obsolete. So the question I have, have maybe devotees or proponents of Sanatana Dharma gotten together to propose a new model, based on the scriptures, maybe propose it to the India Parliament, the United States government, you wouldn't say, here's a better way of doing things, because the old is failing us. Is there any proposals like that?
Well, two things. We're going to the old, not to the new, but that's one thing. And another is informally and formally. Through distributing Prabhupada's books, the message is going. Through having dialogue with persons who receive the books and read the books and request them to apply them, that's going on in an informal way. Then some, as you, I'm sure, aware historically, Prabhupada was advocating the In God We Trust party in Atlanta and that whole effort of literally going into the political arena and speaking the message, not with the intention of getting elected, but with the message of educating. And that was a wonderful era. It was like lots of enthusiasm. And much to the surprise of William Ogle, he got a lot of votes. He wasn't like trying to get votes, but he got a lot of votes. People liked the model. I remember one of the topics that came up, that was one of those debates. I think it was like an Atlanta televised, not nationally televised debate for mayor of Atlanta. And one of the questions was, at the particular time, Atlanta was hugely expanding. And so a concern is, you're a candidate for mayor. What would be your plan for taking care of the increased traffic in our city? Automobile traffic. And different people said different things, and Balavanta said, I would take some of the tax money and have big Harinam festivals. His message was, by I don't know if he used the word Harinam festival, but singing the praises of God and God's holy name, because by so doing one will become purified. And when one is purified, one will be satisfied and not feel they have to go here and go there and do things to find happiness. They'll find happiness within. By finding happiness within, it's going to solve a lot of the congestion problems on the highway. So some people voted for that. You know, the model of spiritual solution to material problems. But so your question was, is something being done to advocate the model? It's being done informally, broadly through book distribution, informally through relationships with people. There are government people, tiny minority, that get it, and in their way they're trying to assist. But largely, governments, especially elected people, it's not about what's right. It's about money. You know, it's dirty. So they're not interested in, you know, models that work. They're interested in what's going to get them elected and going to get them money so they can build their campaign. And it's not, you know, there's no equity in models that work. Okay, thank you very much. Prabhupada ki jai.